put a new thought out on the site last night on what a spiritual awakening looks like, and tied it in with the Nine Step Promises. So somebody read it and tell me it's good. If you didn't like it, don't tell me that. And and then on the site, we have about 145 podcasts and about 60 thoughts. So I've been sending links, and if you like those, you can figure out, you push the menu and you can look at the rest of the site. tonight we're on the family afterward. We finished To Wives. I've done this, I'm almost finished 10 years of doing these meetings, and I always skip To Wives and Family Afterwards and To Employers because they were considered the lost chapters or something. And we would always do a vision for you, and Mark said last year, why don't I do those pages? And I said, well, because I had an old idea, right? So we've done it. We did it last year, last July, and it was really good. We finished To Wives, and I got a lot out of it. And so today I sat down and I opened the book. I didn't listen to what I said last year to the family afterwards. We're on page, where does the chapter start? 122. And I just said, I always say a prayer, God, show me your word, show me the message, help me see the truth in it. And I saw so much in this that I'd never seen before. And this chapter really ties together some of the thoughts on page 83 and on pages 60 to 63. And if you notice, when you study the book like I have and others, it all ties together. It all ties together. And the family afterward is really, how do I live in the world when I come into AA and I start getting sober? How do I live with other people? How do they live with me? How do families live together? And it's really powerful stuff. So it talks the family afterwards. I think, I don't know if it's after the person's worked the steps or after they joined AA or after they're sober, but it's after whatever the catastrophe was that got them here. And there's a lot of bias. I was telling somebody today we were doing this, and they go, oh, I don't like To Wives because such and such and this and that. And I find a lot of people's bias is because they've never really studied things. And those are the kind of old ideas that I've had my whole life that really killed me. You know, I'd make up my mind about something, and then I'd believe it. Anybody else do that?
Yes.
And I made a lot of bad decisions on these things I believed that weren't true. And so let's see what we can get out of it. It says, our women folk have suggested certain attitudes a wife may take with a husband who is recovering. Perhaps they created the impression that the alcoholic is to be wrapped in cotton wool and placed on a pedestal. I don't know if that, no. I don't think that happens too much. It says, and this chapter, this first paragraph is really how we should live and get together, whether we're in recovery or not, whether it's after you come into the relationships or not, how you live together, because it says, successful readjustment means the opposite. And here's a powerful line in this that's one of the principles of living. It says, all members of the family should meet upon the common ground of tolerance, understanding, and love. And we should meet on this ground. So think about it. Where we're living, whatever our wherever we are, it should be a ground of tolerance, understanding, and love. And on page 83, there's a powerful paragraph that I meditate on quite a bit, not every day, but quite a bit. If we could turn to page 83. And it says, in the first paragraph, it says, so we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. And, you know, I meditate on that a lot. And I was thinking about it on the way over here. And it doesn't say for the Creator to help me be patient, tolerant, kind, and loving. It says, show me the way. And I was thinking about that because we don't know the way to do that. How do I practice patience? How do I stop from being impatient? How do I be kind instead of unkind? What's the way of that? And it's good to meditate on that. So I need God to show me the way to do that, because on my own self-centered personality, that's not normal for me. And so that's the common ground on which we're to live. And then we'll go back to page 122. It says, and this is really powerful, this line, it says, this involves a process of deflation. Now, deflation means letting the air out of something, letting the air out of what our views are. Now, listen to these next few lines, because we'll talk about it a little bit. The alcoholic, his wife, his children, his in-laws, notice that's a quotation, each one is likely to have fixed ideas about the family's attitude towards himself or herself. Isn't that true of any family?
Yes.
Any family today. They've all got their own ideas. And notice the word fixed. Brian and I were talking. They added that word. It's a fixed idea. They don't want me to, we don't want to change. We have a fixed position on how things should be about the towards himself or herself. It's the attitude of how I should be treated. Right? And each is interested in having his or her wishes respected. So, you know, everybody has their opinion, but they want to be respected. They really want to get their way. And it says, we find the more one member of the family demands that the others concede to him, the more resentful they become. This makes for discord and unhappiness. Now, that's really a powerful paragraph. Because any relationship, any house, we're all going to go home to someplace tonight. We're going to live with other people, or if even with her by ourselves, we'll see other people. I have to deflate how I think things should be. I shouldn't have a position anymore at home. And my only position should be to be tolerant, understanding, and loving. And if I get a fixed idea of how things should be, then I see the other person differently. I don't see it through tolerance, kindness, and understanding. I see it through my self-centered glasses. And then the demands that the others concede to him, the yield, surrender to their ways, that's going to cause conflict. The more resentful they become, and this makes for discord and unhappiness. And so my old ideas are going to kill me. And I shouldn't have any ideas about how things should be. I should be open-minded and willing to listen and be on a common ground. And so when we're not on that common ground, then there's usually words, or people get their feelings hurt, right? And then they get angry. And here it is. It says, and why? And we read that tonight before the meeting. We were reading about the third step. Is it not because each wants to play the lead? Is not each trying to arrange the family show to his liking? You know where that is. We're going to read it. It's on page 6061. Is he not unconsciously trying to see what he could take from the family life rather than giving? I don't even know if it's unconscious all the time. But I think sometimes we just do it. It's the normal way we react to things. We want to run the show. So if we could turn to page 60. I try not to go back and forth too much, but it does tie together. Is that okay if we go back? Mm-hmm. On the bottom of page 60, it talks about we're at the third step. And the first requirement is I'd be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. So we'll have to be convinced that any family life run on my self-will is not going to be successful. And then at the bottom it says, each person, it's just like we read, it's like an actor who wants to run the whole show. It's forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. And then I wrote, and then the next paragraph it says, what usually happens, the show doesn't come off very well. And then he begins to think that life doesn't treat him right. And so people get their feelings hurt. So they're in relationships, and they have fixed ideas about how it should be and how the family should concede to them. And then they don't get it, and then they get upset. And they don't realize that they're the ones who started the problem by having a fixed idea. And then here's a really good line. It says, cessation of drinking is but the first step away, moving away from a highly strained, abnormal condition. And I wrote that you need 12 steps. And just being sober, we talk about that a lot. Being sober doesn't really change anything, right? You've just stopped drinking. And if you still have your fixed ideas, and if you still have ideas on how the family should be run, and you're not being kind, loving, tolerant, things get really bad. And I wrote, what we have to have is a personality change. And it's, and I like this word, is the first step away from what? Away from the way it was. So of course you have to be sober, but then there's other things you have to do. A doctor said to us, years of living with an alcoholic is almost sure to make any wife or child neurotic. Neurotic, I don't know, it's in here somewhere, but it's not good. It means you're a nervous wreck. Neurotic, I turned right to it. Emotionally and mentally disturbed. So they're disturbed because of our disorder, you see. We've made people emotionally and mentally disturbed because of us. They have anxieties, phobias, irrational fears, abnormal behaviors. And it's a situation that we've created. And it says the entire family is to some extent ill. Let families realize as they start their journey that all will not be fair weather. Each in his turn may be footsore and may straggle. And here's a really, really interesting line. I hadn't seen this before. So you're together and you're trying to walk this path. It says there may be alluring shortcuts. Alluring is a powerful or mysterious or attractive idea. And notice shortcuts and bypass down which they may wander and lose their way. So I wrote that people can stay sober, but then if they go their own path, they're off the path of God. And so nothing's really changed except they stop drinking. It's a really nice way of saying you really need to work the steps and work the program to improve your relationships with the world. They may not change, but you'll see them differently, you'll react differently. Suppose we tell you some of the obstacles a family will meet. Suppose we suggest how they may be avoided, even converted to good use for others. Here's a line, a few word lines. They're talking about how the alcoholic, the family longs for the return of happiness and security. They remember when father was romantic, thoughtful, and successful. I really wonder if that's true at some point. Do they really even remember that? Today's life is measured against that of other years, and when it falls short, the family may be unhappy. My experience in working with a lot of people is that a lot of the family members don't remember the good times. You know, they're blocked out. And they just want it to be different. They don't want to live the way they were. And it says family confidence and dad is, and you can comment on that yourself, how you think. Family confidence and dad is rising high. I think what they're saying actually in that paragraph is they want things to be better. They'd like everybody to act decently to each other and get along and have some love and tolerance in the household. Family confidence in dad is rising high. Now remember when they wrote the book, there was only one woman. So we could say family confidence in anyone is in the husband or wife or woman is rising high. The good old days will soon be back, they think. Sometimes they demand that dad bring them back instantly. Here's one, God, they believe, almost owes this recompense on a long overdue account. They feel they're really due for a change. But remember, when somebody's newly sober, that's a tough time. It's a tough time, and they're not really spiritually changed yet. They're just learning how to live sober. So the expectations are high for the family, but the alcoholic may not have the tools yet to be different. It's a process, remember? But the head of the house has spent years in pulling down the structures of business, romance, friendship, and health. These things are now ruined or damaged. It will take time to clear away the wreck. Though old buildings will eventually be replaced by finer ones, the new structures will take years to complete. Now this ties into a famous two paragraphs on page 82. If it's okay, I'd like to read those, 82 and 83, where they're talking about you're making amends, you're trying to get the family things better with the family. So they say the alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Anybody think that's true? Now, we're not like a thunderstorm. We're a tornado. Tornadoes level everything in their path. Hearts are broken. Sweet relationships are dead. Affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. You know, I think we have to remember that. We have to remember that when we're new and we're working with getting back our relationships. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough, and they're just talking about that cessation of drinking. It's probably not enough at this point. He's like the farmer who came up out of a cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand? The wind stopped blowing." See, we don't see the damage. And then it says, yes, there's a long period of reconstruction ahead. We may must take the lead. That ties into just what they were talking about. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. And we have to sit down with the family. And then it says we clean house with the family. And then we say that prayer every morning. And then it says somewhere else that a remorseful mumbling that we're sorry won't do it. We have to live this way. I think it's one of the other pages. I know I'm getting old. I can't remember everything. And it says, it's going to take time. And we don't see the damage. We don't even know how we could have harmed people. And when we do our fourth and fifth step, we can see some of the truth about it, our behavior. But we can't really be in the other person's shoes. We don't know. But it says, Father knows he is to blame. And how do you know that from your step four? You look at what you did. What were your mistakes? What were your character defects? It may take him many seasons of hard work to be restored financially, but he shouldn't be reproached. Perhaps he will never have much money again. But the wise family will admire him for what he is trying to be, rather from what he is trying to get. Wow. And you know, the whole book, it took me years to realize this, but the whole book, the whole purpose of the steps is not what I'm going to do, it's how I be. And if I be the child of God, if I be the characteristics of personality of God, if I be close to God, then I will do as a result of that. If I'm the St. Francis prayer, which I really like, if I bring, I'm a channel of God's peace, and I bring these things into my day, then that's what I'm going to get and do. And so the big book talks about when we ask for fear, it says, remember, God, we ask God to remove our fear and direct my attention to how I should be. And so the being leads to the doing. How should I be? How should I be? What kind of being? Love, patient, tolerant, kind, or I'm being selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate, intolerant, judgmental? And so I think that's a great line. What we're trying to be rather than what we're trying to get. Now, I was always trying to get things so I would be better or feel better, right? And so they were always self-centered. So if we focus on what we're trying to be the person God created, then we'll get so much, right? We'll get everything we need. Doesn't it say that on the third step? We have a new employer, we work for God, he'll give me everything I need. Now then the family will be plagued by specters from the past, for the drinking career of almost every alcoholic has been marked by escapades, funny, humiliating, shameful, or tragic. The first impulse will be to bury these skeletons in a dark closet and padlock the door. The family may be possessed by the idea that future happiness can be based only upon forgetfulness of the past. We think that such a view is self-centered and in direct conflict with the new way of living. Now, that's an interesting line. We're going to open it up soon. I'm interested in what people think of these pages. Because remember, it says we will not regret the past or shut the door on it, right? And I've always said, well, how can I not regret what I did? Regret. Maybe they used the wrong word. I do regret it, but I don't want to shut the door on it. But the thing is, if I don't connect to my past, then I get away from my first step, right? And we have to stay connected to our first step all the time, or else we're not going to do the deal. And it said, seeing the past moves me to submit to God. So if I think about the past and what happens, then it makes me to continue to seek God, a God seeker. And it reminds us of the first step. And then here's a paragraph, which really I think is about steps 6 and 7. Henry Ford once made a wise remark to the effect that experience is the thing of supreme value in life. And remember, this book is about their experience. And their experience, what they saw, what happened to them, what they learned from a situation. And it's your experience. You can't argue with it. It says that is true, and look at this, only if one is willing to turn the past to good account. So we've had bad experiences, but are we willing to use them to good account. We grow by our willingness to face and rectify errors and convert them into assets. So I don't know. I'll think of things that I did, you know, 30 years ago. I said, boy, that was really obnoxious. That was really bad. And then I'll say, well, you know, I did that because I was selfish, self-centered, and made decisions based on self. I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to be that way anymore. And it makes me know that I need to continue to submit to God, submit to God's will. And it says, this is a line that I think is, Al-Anon talks about this, the alcoholic's past life becomes the principal asset of the family and frequently is the only one. This painful past may be of infinite value to other families still struggling with the problem. Well, remember, when we meet the alcoholic, we're supposed to share what happened to us and what it was like. And so we can win their confidence, right? And then we tell them what we did, and if they want what we have, they'll do what we did. And that's really how AA works. We think each family which has been relieved owes something to those who have not. And when the occasion requires, each member of it should be only too willing to bring former mistakes, no matter how grievous, out of their hiding places. Remember, in Working with Others, he talks about how you have to, if the, what's that thinking of? I don't know, I lost the track. It says, each member should be only too willing to bring former mistakes, no matter how grievous, out of their hiding places. Showing others who suffer how we were given help is the very thing which makes life seem so worthwhile to us now. Oh, now I know what I was thinking about. If you read Working with Others, and if you study A in the beginning, the families went to the meetings. The wives might go if the husband still didn't go, remember? And they said, if the man doesn't want what you have, go to the family. The spiritual life is for everybody. And so they did that because they were very close-knit in the beginning days. They all lived close to each other. It was a different world. Cling to the thought that in God's hand, the dark past is the greatest possession you have, the key to life and happiness with others. With it, you can avert death and misery for them. I know that's quoted. I think it's quoted in Al-Anon. Cling to the thought that in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession you have, the key to life and happiness for others. With it, you can avert death and misery for them. And I wrote what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. It's possible that they got past misdeeds, so they become a blight, a veritable plague. For example, we know of situations here, they're talking about love affairs between the partners with other people. In the first flush of spiritual experience, they forgave each other, drew closer together. The miracle of reconciliation was at hand. Then under one provocation or another, the aggrieved one would unearth the old affair and angrily cast its ashes about. A few of us have had these growing pains and they hurt a great deal. Husbands and wives have sometimes been obliged to separate for a time until new perspective. I like that. How do we get a new perspective with God? God helps us see things. New victory over hurt pride could be re-won. Hurt pride is tough, is a tough one, right? And it leads to resentment, and you have to learn to forgive. Remember, willingness to forgive comes from God, and we don't excuse behavior, but we have to forgive, and it can be really hard, right? So it says on page 76, you keep asking for willingness. Keep praying for willingness to forgive. And I think that power to forgive comes from God. But these are hard things. They talk about jealousy, these hurt prides. These are very difficult emotions for all human beings. I think they call jealousy the most powerful on page, when they talk about the sex inventory. In most cases, the alcoholic survived this ordeal without relapse, but not always. So we think that unless some good and useful purpose is to be served, past occurrences should not be discussed. And I think for that to happen, both people have to forgive. And I know a lot of people in AA have exes. And sometimes the ex will never forgive the alcoholic. And they keep wanting to make you pay and blame you for everything. And they say, we only pay the bill once. And so those are hard, where people, they hold on to their resentments and they use it as power over you. And so when you're in those situations, that's a tough one, because you have to set boundaries. And you have to, you make your amends, but then you can't be making amends the rest of your life. And so those are tough ones. We families of alcoholics keep few skeletons in the closet. Everyone knows about the other's alcoholic troubles. This is a condition which in ordinary life would produce total untold grief. There might be scandalous gossip, laughter at the expense of other people, and a tendency to take advantage of intimate information. Well, that can't possibly happen in AA, but I'm being facetious. So we talked about at the Monday night meeting at the business about anonymity and how we talk about people. And it says, among us, these are rare recurrences. So it's what we must not do when we talk about other people. We shouldn't be scandalous gossip. We shouldn't make fun of other people. We shouldn't take advantage of intimate information. So here's where they talk about, it says, we do talk about each other a great deal, but we almost invariably temper such a talk by a spirit of love and tolerance. So I think that's what they were trying to say, you know, if you, when you're talking and discussing people in AA, have a loving and tolerant attitude. And they don't really talk about anonymity. They don't see anything wrong with that, but it's, what are your motives? And then I wrote here, these are the three things that I have to answer the questions before I say anything. Is it kind? Is it necessary? And is it true? And so think about that. So I told my wife that. I said, you know, unless it's kind, necessary, or true, you know, I really can't say anything. So we were driving and to pick up the granddaughter. It's an hour and 20 minutes, and I wasn't talking. She says, well, why aren't you talking? I said, well, I don't know. Is it kind? Is it necessary or true? And if you think about that, a lot of our conversations are not kind, and they're not necessary, and they may be true. And so that's really helped me change the way I look at things. I don't know what anybody else thinks of that. It was the same, the speaker who said that is the same guy who said, the only thing lacking in every situation is the love I don't bring into it. So I think we'll stop there. I'll just read one more line because it ties in. Another principle we observe carefully is that we do not relate intimate experiences with another person unless we are sure we would approve. So I wrote, we have to keep a confidence. And we find, and that's what they say, would you hear here, let it stay here. You know, some people reveal confidence. They need to feel free to share things here. We have to be careful. And we says we find it better when possible to stick to our own stories. And a man may criticize or laugh at himself, it will affect others. But criticism or ridicule coming from another produces a contrary effect. We have to avoid being sarcastic. And it says, one careless, inconsiderate remark has been known to raise the very devil. Here's a line that I don't know if it's true. You'll tell me. We alcoholics are sensitive people. I think he's being really nice about it. I said, we're extremely sensitive. And everybody is sensitive, but we're extremely sensitive. I think we wear our emotions on our shoulder. I've heard that said sometime. It takes some of us a long time to outgrow that serious handicap, and that's the need for approval and dependence on people for approval. So I'm going to stop there. I hope this was helpful. I got a lot out of it. So we got some time, and everybody's had a family or relationship at one time, so we should all have some good, see what we got out of that. Thank you, guys.